I just want to show you two real document examples of functional annotations and a functional specifications. Then what we're going to do is take we'll work a little bit in class this evening. We'll talk about what we'll do on Thursday. And the hands-on exercise in class tonight is thinking about the outlines and the level of annotations that are sort of necessary for functional annotations, the annotated wireframes. We're going to go back to the coffee maker exercise that we started at the beginning of this class. So you still remember some of you may even have your sketches, your coffee maker exercises. But if we were going to be annotating the screens for the interaction for the coffee vending machine example, what would be the important things to call out? What would be the screens that we need? What would be the scenario and the usage? And just sort of coming up with an outline. What screens do we need and what are the important things to annotate? And having a plan, because that's the level of thinking, the level of detail that you'll need for your own projects then for Thursday. All right, so here are two examples. This is a Wells Fargo. Shh, you didn't see any of this. Does anyone work for another bank? Anyone? Okay, you still didn't see any of this. These are annotated wireframes, right? So we've got a wireframe. This is a combination of, we jokingly refer to it as a wire comp because it's obviously very, very high fidelity, but it's not the true final visual design. These are taken from a prototype that was done, that was actually tested with customers. So when we do the prototypes for Wells Fargo, they're really high fidelity. They actually look like the website, but we're just totally emulating the design of the site. But you can see we've got these callouts, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then we've got notes over here. Jeff, you probably recognize the annotations panel style here. So we've got the numbered callouts, the notes off to the side as to what's going on. Notice not everything on this page is annotated, right? It's just things that are unique to the experience. So stuff like sign off, go to account summary, online security, need help, stuff that's down here in the footer, that's just standard for the Wells Fargo site. We didn't change the functionality. There's nothing different about it on this page as what is on the existing site. It wasn't important for us to annotate it. We only needed to annotate how things would behave if there was a difference between the default. Now you might say, well, shouldn't the logo always link to home? Because this says links to Wells Fargo Home. The reason that one is annotated is because this experience is actually delivered from multiple Wells Fargo sites. And sometimes it's in line and sometimes it's in its own little hop-up and it comes from the intranet and all kinds of messy things. So something that seems like a very obvious annotation had to be included because that logo doesn't always do that on their site, curiously enough. Not every page requires annotations either, right? So you'll see occasionally some things in here that are not annotated, some that are annotated to a greater extent. Unfortunately, I can't give you these as models or as examples. So here's a great example of one that on this particular form, the developers needed to know things like what are the maximum ranges, what are the default values, what are the selections. We've got sliders and things that have bounded values. So that's just all called out off to the side, right? This is much more efficient to do this, to annotate this, than it is to show it graphically, right? Like, do I have to draw something that shows it with 0 and then draw something that shows it with 80,000? No, here's the form field, here are the valid ranges for it, right? So, like we always say, choose the form of design document. Choose the deliverable that is most efficient for the problem you're trying to solve and the information you're trying to communicate. Why draw multiple states of these form fields when it's a whole lot easier to just use text descriptions for the valid values or for the inputs or for the formats, things like that. So these are just annotated wireframes, some a bit more than others.
That goes to both the Wells Fargo client and then the developer?
Yep. Yeah, this is sort of like the culmination of the interaction design work here because the annotations represent anything that's unique to the experience that is not standard to the Wells Fargo system. So that's why we use functional annotations. I only had to call out the differences. On the other hand, if we're doing something huge, big, brand new, or something that is completely custom, then we may get something like a functional specifications. And so this is a much larger document. You can see it's running around 70, 75 pages. Table of contents. I just want to call out the individual sections. Remember we talked about how we start with the global patterns and we become increasingly specific and detailed as we go. So we start off with global design patterns, global page structure, and then we start getting into individual instances, right? Like what are the patterns on the home and landing pages, patterns on the category pages, patterns on the product pages, the different sections of the site in this case. So as we go in, you'll see here are global design patterns, and these are largely text descriptions here, because these are patterns that are just really common in our web design today, right? A carousel, tabbed content, hide show, sticky tooltips, drawers, windows. Do I have to have a picture to show you what that is? I mean, we used to put the pictures in, and then we discovered that everyone kind of knew what they were. So now we're just describing how they're going to behave in this particular instance. You got a question, Jeremy?
So is this just from a template, so to speak? Like you have the text pre-written, or you're kind
this of... This one, yes. We've written it enough times. Okay. Yeah, we take the template and then we modify it on a per-client basis. But the farther in we get, the less we have to work from. So the table of content structure, yep, we've got a template. This, global patterns, yep, here are more global patterns. But now we get into unique stuff, right? So here I'll just, let me shrink this down a little bit so you can see. There you go. I know you can't really read it, but you get a sense of the page, right? So this is tabloid size. So we've got wireframe elements and then full descriptions on all of their behavior and the different conditions. So these are global patterns. They are repeated throughout the entire site. Define them once, that way we don't have to deal with it when we see it later. And the first of these are largely navigational. This set is secondary navigation and different instances of the secondary nav and how it behaves and so on. And then we get into the pages. So the home page, functional elements on the home page, and there are some things in here that would be considered business logic-y because we're talking about where the content is coming from and how it is displayed on a personalized basis. So the page may actually change for content under certain conditions. So some of those annotations are in there. You can see this is a much greater level of detail. Multiple variations on a UI element, right? And how the different options, you probably can't see, it says option 2 and option 3. Option 1 was on the previous page. So this is clearly a much deeper level of content than you get in functional annotations. But this is a sufficient amount of detail then for the development team. This is also often used by business analysts and the product managers to sort of like go through and validate the requirements. It does in fact do everything that was on the requirements list for this particular project. So on the client side, they'll often use these to validate that everything was completed. So just another example for you. Any questions on either the functional annotations or the functional specifications?
We don't talk about the error messaging and stuff like that. We just keep it to the IP trail, as you said.
In this right now for this project,
no, yeah. Like, but usually.
But in real life, no. It's more, much more to it. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think we have. Now, for this particular client, we did it in a separate document. We had a content document. We did content strategy and content models for this client. So the error messaging was handled with the content stuff. It was in a separate one in this case. Right? Yeah, you need to design for error prevention and error handling in the event that it occurs. For the project in this particular class, we're just doing the happy path, right? The idea here is that this is the VC lab. This is the startup. you're going to show the best case scenario, the happy path, ideal user in an ideal situation with an ideal task where everything goes right, because that makes people feel good, right? You don't get funded on your error handling, you get funded on your concept. So that's why we're focused on the positive here. But in the grand scheme of things, you totally need to be aware of the error handling and how what happens there.
What about dealing with the ecosystem, where it's being used, how many people, all those things we dealt with earlier?
Right. That comes, for us, that is the kind of thing we do at the beginning of the project, right? That's the discovery, the strategic engagement to really understand the opportunity space and what's mm-hmm. going on. That should have been considered, obviously, as we get to the final design, but all of that information has been summarized much, much earlier in the project, so we don't need to repeat it here. There was a project charter and, you know, a creative brief and stuff like that that would have been delivered at the beginning of the project that encompasses all of that. Yeah, good question, though. Okay, so for Thursday, what we're going to be doing is taking your projects. You've got a charter, you've got some sketches. The sketches were supposed to show like the larger ecosystem of the device, right? So we've been getting into an increasing level of detail every round that we've been working on. So first off was the opportunity, and that was the charter, right? Who are we targeting? What are we targeting them for? Why are we doing this? Who are the competitors? Then we talked about the larger physical ecosystem of the device or the interface and where it fits into people's lives and interactions. And for those sketches, remember we specifically said don't include the digital interface. We're going to be wireframing those. So we spent the past 2 weeks now wireframing the digital interface. So now we want to make sure that we've got the sequence of wireframes that are telling a complete story of an interaction, and that they are sufficiently annotated that if you left your deck with a VC pitch team, or with a VC team, that they could then look at it offline and understand the product idea, the opportunity, the typical interaction, right? They should be able to read these things and understand them on their own. So what you really are going to be doing in the next couple days is just assembling all of these bits and adding in a level of annotation and description that is basically drawing a thread. It's sewing all of the bits together and it's creating a complete story so that you now have the packaged concept for a product, maybe a device, maybe an app, whatever it happens to be, but it is a self-contained unit of here's the opportunity, here's the ecosystem, here's the product and the interaction. So that's what we're going to be talking about on Thursday. There's a series of evaluation factors here. You can take a look at these to give you a sense of some of the things that people could be looking for, right? These are evaluation factors for interaction design. So they're fairly focused here. But we should be thinking about things like, does it allow the user to be autonomous? Does it account for differing physical abilities? Is there consistency, predictability, learnability, perceivability, all of those factors in the UI? Do we have smart defaults and an easy way to change them? So are we saving work for people? Are we focused on the user's efficiency, not the machines, right? We're designing to take work away from the people, not to code cheaply to force people to do more work for a stupid computer. Is it explorable, discoverable? What about touchability, mouseability, and physical interactions? Icons, symbols, language, is it meaningful, metaphorical? Do people get it, right? If they just look at it, do they understand what to do? We had a great discussion with Michelle at the beginning of class tonight around what symbol do I put there that tells people exactly what to do? Touch this, tap here, is it a physical button, right? So it's that type of consideration. So latency reduction, remember, stop wasting their time, provide rapid feedback, is it learnable, the use of metaphor. All of these are things that we should be looking for as we are listening to people's pitches. So we'll have just a couple minutes for each. The idea is bring in digitally packaged. You can either post it on the wiki, like a packaged up PDF or a series of PDFs, and we can pull it up off the wiki. If it's too large, you can bring it on a USB drive and we'll just plug it in and access it that way. But we'll project it and you'll get your like 3 minutes to talk through, right? Walk us through the happy path. What's my product? This is why it's awesome. And here is who's going to use it and what that interaction is. I'll bring in some sheets that we can use as little, I don't want to call them scorecards, but as like little cheat sheets for the people in the classroom so that we can think about things like the problem that is being solved, the appeal of the product, stuff like that. And then, of course, we can take a look at these factors. And after we go through the presentation, then we can have a quick discussion in class about what were some of the things that we saw in here that really stood out to us. There's usually a handful of things that stand out. We identify trends or patterns, you know, things that we saw people doing, like lots of gestural, you know, really started to show up in the last year or so. 3 years ago, people weren't doing all the touch gestural things, right? They were much more physical button devices. So we get to see patterns. How are, you know, is this the year of spatial gestures? Is this the year of voice? Is this the year of cybernetic implants or whatever? So we start to see these trends. And the reason that I think that's important for us as a class is because you've had a whole green field or blue sky opportunity in here to do whatever you want. So you took time at the beginning of this class to go out and look and say, hey, I kind of like this idea. What's going on in this space? What are other people doing? And whether you realize it or not, you've just sort of inadvertently, as a group, tried to identify what's cutting edge, right? What's bleeding edge, what is new, what is out there. And as a group, we might be able to identify what's going to happen in the next 6 or 12 or 18 months. And so it's kind of fun to look at the patterns that emerge from our own presentations. So that's how we'll end then on Thursday. Any questions about what the goal is for Thursday? Yeah?
Just have a quick question. Like my project hat is an app that you can do many different functions from, mm-hmm. and so I'm not really sure how deep I should go into each path that I can
the
user on.
Is the primary use case a single path? Is it like the majority of the use cases will be a single path, or the majority of the use cases are a combination of two things or three things?
Okay, so just do like the most use, the biggest need that's being met.
Yeah, what's the biggest need being met? What's the most common use case for this particular thing?
Okay.
You can mention along the way, you know, that, oh, and if you went this way, you'd be able to do such and such. But keep it focused on the happy path, right? Ideal customer, ideal situation, ideal task. Okay. So we've got about half an hour in here now. What I'd like you to do is get back, if you can, reassemble your coffee maker groups, the coffee vending machine groups. You probably don't, I forgot to remind you last week on Thursday to bring any of your previous documentation. So if you have it, yay for you, bad for me. If you don't have it, you can work off of memory. It's not that essential that you have it though, however, because what I want you to do is to create an outline of what would be the coffee vending machine pitch package, right? Like, what's the opportunity? What's the product? What's the differentiator? What would be the story that you're going to tell? And then outlining, like, what would be the wireframes that we would need? What are the touch points in this interaction? So really planning, how do you tell this compelling story about this device? And what are the documents, the deliverables, the information that would be necessary to do that? Because doing it for that known project is going to help you map out what you will need to do for your own on Thursday. And the more you actually think about it tonight, that model that you take with you from the coffee vending machine may actually help you figure out what to do for your own project for just a couple days from now. So thinking through that in an outline form. And I'll mill around and take a look if you've got questions about the level of detail or the number of steps that are necessary, flag me down. Otherwise, I'm going to be milling around. Yeah?
If we have a section in our wireframe flow where the user comes up and does something else, like physically, but that's, you know, initially represented in the ecosystem drawings, do we combine those at all?
You can, yeah.
Like, toss in like the comic style drawing in between the interface?
You totally can do that.
Okay.
Yep. If that helps tell the story, go for it, right? There's no restrictions that say wireframes always have to be wireframes, that you can have another thing right in the middle of it. you know, la la la, wireframe, 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 then a miracle happens, wireframe, wireframe, wireframe. As long as you can validate that whatever that step is in the middle, or as long as it makes sense. Anyone who is switching things like content and experiences from one device to another is a great example of where we might have that little, you know, interceding step that shows wire, or, you know, phone, arrow, laptop kind of thing. It's not a wireframe, but it shows it's transparent. Yeah, perfect. Okay, find your coffee groups. I'll give you a couple minutes and then I'll wander around.